And as we move into the future, I think you'll see that reinventing the body is not a possibility in the future, it's a possibility right now.
And right now, it's a different pulse. We've got one of the most well-known doctors in the world.
I never planned anything. I just pursued my passion for healing and understanding fundamental reality, and I shared it with the world.
Now, that passion years ago was divisive, even controversial, but over time...
What I was saying 40 years ago is slowly becoming mainstream science.
Dr. Deepak Chopra, now on The Pulse. Guys, welcome to another episode of The Pulse. Always talking to people who are doing cool things, impacting the world. Our theme, Use Your Voice for Good. But I can honestly say I have never spoken to anyone as I go down the list, authored nearly 100 books, dozens of New York Times bestsellers, named to the top 100 influencers in the entire world of the last century, 20 million fans on social media, number 17 in the world as influential thinkers. Like, you could go on and on and on. You're all familiar with the name. We have the pleasure of speaking to Dr. Deepak Chopra. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to talk to us a little bit.
The pleasure, Bill. Thank you.
When you hear that, I mean, you lived it, you know, so I'm guessing it's not a shock to you, but do even you kind of hear some of the things you've been able to accomplish in your life and go, wow?
Well, you know, it just happened. I never planned anything. I just pursued my passion for healing and understanding fundamental reality, and I shared it with the world, and there we are. It wasn't something that I was doing out of ambition or exacting plans, or, as I said, because I wanted to be famous. I was just sharing my ideas, and some people responded, and that seems to be a perpetual surprise to me even now.
Yeah, I would say that some people responded. Absolutely. In doing research, as I do before I speak to everyone, and obviously we introduced you as Dr. Deepak Chopra, but I was not as familiar with your medical, standard medicine background. So tell us a little bit about your background, how you got here. I mean, you're a licensed, studied medical doctor.
I still am. I teach at Mount Sinai Medical School in New York, and I teach at the University of California Medical School in San Diego. I have a faculty appointment at the medical school in Lake Nona in Florida. So I haven't given up that. My training was in internal medicine and then in endocrinology, which is the study of hormones. And then after that, neuroendocrinology, which is looking at the molecules of emotion in the brain. That led me to what is now called integrative medicine. And then I went a little deeper beyond that because I realized that mind and body are not fundamental reality. Fundamental reality is what we call consciousness or awareness, or to use a layman's term, spirit. And that is the most challenging area to now explore, both philosophically and scientifically.
With all of your, and we'll kind of evolve through it, but with all of your standard medicine background, and I'm kind of trying to specify the two, was it hard for you when you started branching off into things that in some ways standard medicine questioned?
Standard medicine questioned that about 35, 40 years ago, because standard medicine is based on reductionism, which means you look at the mechanisms of disease and then you figure out how to interfere with that. So you look at how bacteria multiply, then you figure out, you know, which antibiotic to use. You figure out how cancer cells multiply, figure out the best radiation or chemotherapy. And that works in acute situations. We shouldn't deny that standard medicine saves lives. But when it comes to chronic disease, you know, diseases like heart disease or cancer or autoimmune illness or Alzheimer's, a lot of that has to do with looking at the body as a whole, and not just looking at the body, but looking at the mind, at emotions, and even our spiritual awakening as components of everyday experience. So ultimately, what we call our physical body is the culmination of all the experiences we have, not just, you know, not just eating and breathing and behaving, but everything from sensory experience to perception, to thoughts, to feelings, to emotions, to imagination, to our sense of self, to our biological rhythms. All this influences our body through a mechanism called epigenetics. So only 5% of disease is due to what are called fully penetrant genes that guarantee the disease. Even for that, there's a major breakthrough in standard medicine. It's coming. It's on the highway right now. It's called gene editing. You'll be able to cut and paste genes in the same way as you cut and paste emails. And that will get rid of the 5% of disease that is genetically determined. But 95% of our disease is through epigenetic modulation of gene activity, which means everyday experiences like sleep and stress management and mind-body coordination and exercise and diet and biological rhythms and emotional resiliency and spiritual experience. Yes, 35, 40 years ago, that was challenging, and to the criticism of my mainstream colleagues. But now, with all the science we have in genetics, in epigenetics, microbiome, consciousness, and much, much more, what I was saying 40 years ago is slowly becoming mainstream science. And that's what I teach at the medical schools too.
Was there a time, and I'm not going to pretend to understand all of the specifics of the things that you've spent your life studying and teaching and what have you, but was there a period of time for you when you're going through your training, when you're practicing standard medicine, and you are coming out with these statements that are more accepted, as you said, now, but was there kind of a aha moment for you when you realized you needed to be going down a different path than what everybody else was teaching?
Yeah, it was my training. I was looking at the molecules of emotion. I was working with brain scientists, and the aha moment was, wherever a thought goes, a molecule goes with it. So you cannot separate the mind and the body. They are a unified experience in our own consciousness. So those aha moments were in the lab, with working with colleagues who were looking at the same thing, and under the mentorship of a very famous, wonderful neuroscientist by the name of Seymour Reichlin, who I just met 3 weeks ago. He's now 100 years old. And if he finds a snake in his garden, he dissects the brain to look for molecules of emotion, even in snakes. So that was my inspiration.
Okay, that's next level. They're still doing that type of thing. I don't know, just on a side note before we continue the discussion, I know you're probably familiar with Iyanla VanZant. I don't know if you are, if you
know
Iyanla VanZant.
Yeah, I know her well. She's a good friend.
So Iyanla, I grew up with Iyanla. She used to work in radio with my family. And on a side note, I joke with her that people expect Iyanla to fix their life, like when she meets them, because that's her thing, her training, her background. How often when people meet you, like I've read multiple books where people just wanted to meet you so you could kind of go down that path with them. How many people ask you or expect you to heal them inside of a 15-minute conversation?
Yeah, a lot. But I tell them I can point the way, only they can heal themselves. Ultimately, you can only give directions to what you know as a mind-body expert, but ultimately all healing is dependent on the person themselves. They have to have the knowledge, but they also need to have the experience. I'm like a policeman directing traffic.
So it's hard to just go to dinner. Somebody sees you. It's like, oh, there he is. I've been having this problem with fill in the blank.
Yeah, that's true.
So you have, and we've talked about, and I ran down kind of all of the credentials, and it has led to an extreme level of popularity, an extreme level of curiosity from people. But it also led to, as I was doing some research, people who just made it their purpose to try to criticize and discredit the things that you were saying. How do you cope with something like that? You've been doing it for years.
Yeah, I used to take it seriously, but then I realized actually, first, if I took it too seriously, that would interfere with my work. So I did not take it that seriously. But on the other hand, I also realized that your critics sometimes have good things to point out and that they can serve as a feedback. So I changed my attitude to regarding my critics as my best friends from whom I could learn something. And that's my attitude now. My critics are, in a way, good friends of mine because I can learn something from even their criticism. Sometimes it's valid and sometimes it's not.
So you don't take it personally anymore. You just kind of go with it.
No.
Why do you think that the ideas, like people, and I agree with you that over time, people have been much more open to the concept of alternative forms of medicine and healing yourself and what have you. Why do you think that message resonates so deeply with so many people?
It resonates intuitively with people because they've had these experiences. It resonated with me as a physician because I couldn't explain sometimes why some people recovered when they were not supposed to and why some people died when they were not supposed to. So, you know, I started listening to the stories of my patients and finding some validity to their experience. At that time, there was no science. But now, 30 years later, science, neuroscience and epigenetics and microbiome and artificial intelligence give us access to not only people's experiences, but how to validate that scientifically. So it's a process. You know, the problem is our medical training until recently doesn't focus on mind, body, or spirit. It only focuses on basically physical aspects of our biology. But yet our biology is not just physical. We use our biology to express emotions, experience emotions, and self-reflection and thought and spiritual experience. All are part of our biological organism.
In sitting here talking to you, and we haven't been talking that long, but you've mentioned how things have changed over 30 years, you know, multiple times. For lay people like myself, what has changed? Like, what has gotten better that you feel like you were saying so many years ago that people are now accepting?
Every experience you have, thoughts, feelings, emotions, desires, imagination, transcendence, prayer, meditation, any experience you have is now measurable through technology. And then not only is it measurable, we can see the brain correlates of your experiences. And then we can, through artificial intelligence, see the connection between that and lifestyle and mind-body interactions, so that once everything is measurable, you can personalize the future of well-being. In my opinion, the future of well-being is very precise, it's very personalized, it's very predictive, it's preventive, it's a process in which you can participate, and the technology exists, including the technology that we call this handheld device. So, you know, I can do a video of yours saying, hello, how are you? I could capture this video, look at your facial expressions, tone of your voice, your eye movements, your gestures, your body language, and correlate that with your blood pressure, your heart rate, your immune system, your hormones. So that's the progress we've made in the last 30 years.
And you said you're still teaching, you're still practicing, you're still a medical doctor.
I am. I have a license in Massachusetts, a license in California, a license in Florida, and I'm just renewing my license for New York City as well.
I ask that because if you're a licensed medical professional, then some of the things that people criticize, you actually couldn't say, like, if you can't back those things up and still maintain a license. I wonder if it, because over the course of time when people have criticized you, you've still had a license that you couldn't have if you were just outwardly, as they said, like babble science.
No, in order to renew your license every 2 years, you have to pass certain exams and you have to get CME credits. So I have to do that every 2 years to get my CME credits and pass the exam. And so that's how you get a license. But what I'm saying is not considered unscientific anymore by most people. And people like Wikipedia, etc., they have to catch up. But otherwise, in academic institutions, what I'm saying is not contested anymore.
Did you ever feel like, it doesn't sound like you cared that much, but is it validating to know that stuff that you've been saying for this many years is now being more accepted as mainstream?
Yeah, it is validating, but also I listen to my intuition even when we did not have the science. And I listen to my patients and their experiences.
So you're on, I don't know if you can call it a tour, like when you're going around helping people and doing those types of things, going multiple places all over the world. And then we kind of saw, interestingly, New Jersey, you're doing as well. Tell us about this tour and why you decided to make New Jersey your stop, your only stop in the United States.
Well, first of all, my internship 53 years ago was in a hospital in New Jersey. So, that's where I took my internship. And this evening I am speaking at a theater in Red Bank in New Jersey. It brings me back to old times, but I've spoken in New Jersey very frequently. And I'm looking forward to this evening where I'm going to be discussing both the future of well-being and the awakened life, the spiritual awakening, which is our next phase of evolution as human beings. And from there, I'm going to California for a couple of days, and then onward to Egypt, and then to England, and then to Europe. And I'm also speaking about my last book, which is called Quantum Body, which takes the argument that I've presented over 30 years to the next level, explaining it through quantum science.
What do people see when they come and sit down and get a chance to have you in their presence and answering questions and what have you? What's your show like?
I think they get a few aha moments, and some of them leave transformed, and some of them leave with an intention for transformation. And a lot of people find some kind of solace in the idea that much of our well-being is in our own hands, and that even old age, infirmity, and death do not have to be unpleasant.
Why do you think, as I'm going through, and it's interesting, I feel like I want to be sitting there and embracing all of this, or I could read, any number of the 94 books that you've continued to write. But I look at some of the people you've had a direct impact in, and well-known names, the Lady Gagas, the Alicia Keys, the people like that. Why do you think that they were on board first or before some others were willing to accept?
Well, the people you mentioned, Lady Gaga or Alicia Keys or Michael Jackson or Marlon Brando or others, they're very creative people and they understand that creativity doesn't come from the mind, it comes from a deeper level of the soul. And so they're aligned in this way of thinking already. And they just find some kind of confirmation of validity because I bring the science to them.
It's interesting, again, on another kind of personal note, I have something called sarcoidosis. And I have, I mean, you're a doctor, so you understand. We have, and live with it for years. And I remember when I was first diagnosed, they just loaded me up on steroids. And I hated the way it made me feel. So I stopped taking them and I sought out, this was 20 years ago. I sought out an alternative medicine specialist who got me off of the steroids, and I've done pretty well since then. I feel like that desire to get away from just being loaded up with medicine and trying to take control of your life and well-being would lead people to folks like you. Has that kind of been your experience too?
Yes, that is my experience. And we now know that things like good sleep and stress management and meditation and mindfulness and diet and biological rhythms and emotional resiliency all help in restoring what we call self-regulation or homeostasis, which is the technical word for healing.
You have said in the past, or Wikipedia said that you said in the past, so correct me if I'm wrong, that whole journey to, in quotes, attaining perfect health. And perfect health can be attained. Now tell me, one, if that's, you know, Wikipedia science, or if that is in fact the goal and the path that you have people on.
Well, I'm 78 years old and I have no sickness. And I think, in perfect health. I don't have any aches and pains. I don't have any emotional issues or mental issues. And, I go once, twice a year for medical checkups, and it's always perfectly normal. So I don't see why that shouldn't be applied to anyone else, unless they have a genetically determined, fully penetrant gene, which is less than 5%. Anybody has access to well-being and what I call perfect health.
So that is the journey that people like myself who want that, that's a journey that you think is reasonable for us to continue on?
Absolutely. Everybody.
Okay. So what's next? You're on tour. It feels like you're writing books constantly, even still. Like, what, with someone who is accomplishing and has accomplished as much as you have, is there a what's next, or is today what's
next? That's my next book.
There we go.
Digital Dharma, How Artificial Intelligence Can Elevate Spiritual Intelligence and Well-Being.
How do you do this? Like, how do you continue in so many evolving topics, just continue to knock these books out? And they're not little thin books. Like, this is extensive.
I keep up with what's happening in the world of science and philosophy. And then I get ideas and then I share them.
Fair enough. Couple more things. I appreciate you taking this time. You're very involved with, have worked with multiple people on several charities. You're always trying to heal people. But why is expanding that and the additional charity so important to you?
I think we need a more peaceful, just, sustainable, healthier and joyful world. And right now our world is plagued with war, with terrorism, with social and racial injustice, with economic injustice, with climate change, and with mechanized ways of killing each other. I think if we had a critical mass of people engaged in what we call love in action, we could have a more peaceful, just, sustainable, healthier, and joyful world. And that is what my nonprofit foundation attempts to do. We work on mental well-being, suicide prevention, conflict resolution, and also health and longevity. I think nonprofit work is very important, at least at my stage in life. I've been there, done that, walked the path of fame and fortune, and now it's my time to serve.
Two things, and I'm done with the final question of the show. We were, myself and producer in studio, were looking at your bio, and I want your advice. You've been 17 in the world as influential thinkers, number one in the world for medicine and influential thinkers in the field of medicine. How do I get to be top 17 in the world in anything?
By not having that ambition, just finding your passion, singing your song, and not worrying who listens, what they think.
I like it. The final question for every guest on The Pulse, the theme of our show is the concept of use your voice for good. That seems to be something you've dedicated your life to. But when you hear the phrase, use your voice for good, what does that mean in your life?
Am I enjoying myself doing what I'm doing? Am I working with people who are happy? And am I alleviating suffering in the world? If the answer is yes to these three things, I'm in.
Dr. Deepak Chopra, we appreciate you taking time out. We'll enjoy your statements tonight, your speech tonight. I'm going to continue reading books. But I thank you. This has been fun. I appreciate you taking some time.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Beth.
Guys, thanks so much for listening to the Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast. Today with Dr. Deepak Chopra. That one was different. Like, there's somebody who has so much of a background, so much of a following, internationally known, but not for singing a song or performing or acting, for his pursuit of happiness, health, and wellness. That was cool to kind of get a chance to talk to him. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Do me a favor, hit the like, subscribe, follow button, whichever one it is for you, so you'll get a notification every time a new episode of The Pulse comes out. And I encourage you to download the Fox Local app on your smart TVs. That way you can have all of the episodes we've done, over 100 and counting, right there at your fingertips. As always, you can hit me up on social media at BillAFox29. I love hearing from you. And I leave you today, as I always do, reminding you, whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.